when I was around 18 years old. And I was working at a salon there with some lovely, lovely people. One day the owner came in and said, look, I think I'm going to be shutting down the salon. So, you know, I want to let you guys know nice and early so you can find new places to work. And I was really devastated because I had been really enjoying the job and I liked the environment and I didn't really want to move on. And so we were talking about it kind of endlessly. And she said to me, well, I'll sell it to you if you like.
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight, I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And today I'm lucky enough to have Kim Curtin here with me. Kim, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alex. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to have you on. And I thought I'm not going to try and introduce you to the same level that you give your introductions. I was just listening to your latest episode and there was a valid conversation about you should win an award for the introductions that you do for your guests, but I thought I'm better off handing to you and maybe just getting you to bring my listeners up to speed, I guess, on what it is that you do.
I love that. I think I know the episode that you must have been listening to, lovely Cherie Clonan. It's not difficult to give her a wonderful introduction, but I tend to do that because, like what happens to me now, as soon as I try to think about who I am, what I do, and anything that's remotely interesting, it's like complete blank. I'll do my very best for you. So I am a passionate podcaster through and through. So I am a host and producer and creator of the podcast Unemployed and Afraid, which is for the brave small business humans out there. So the brave people building their own business, where we talk about the reality of what it's like to step into a new identity, to build your business from the ground up, and chatting to people at any stage of their business building journey, because we have so much to learn from each other in that space. And I'm also a branded podcast consultant. So I have a small boutique consulting firm where I help brands and brand owners, marketers, business owners build themselves podcasts, to use them as content marketing tools, community development tools, B2B relationships, just really utilizing that beautiful engagement space of podcasting for a business outcome. So I talk about podcasts all day, or I am on them, or I am thinking about them or listening to them.
Yeah. So that's really awesome. And you even introduced yourself well. So well done.
Thank you.
And I'll dive into a bunch of that you've sort of just discussed there and really dive into what it is that you do. I was keen to first zoom back and sort of look a bit at your own career journey, because we all have a unique way of getting to where we've ended up. How would you sort of describe the overview of your career?
Well, unique is the perfect word for it. I'd say unique, wild, twisting, wiggly, weird, random, all of the words to describe my career journey. As we were talking about just before we hit record, I am, at our time of recording, 38 years old, holding on to that before we hit 39. And so I'll go right back to when I was a wee little 15-year-old, which was the earliest I could get myself out of school. I was absolutely chomping at the bit to do my own thing, to work. You know, I didn't love school. It didn't love me. And I was more than encouraged to go out into the world and be like, look, if you're not going to concentrate here, just crack on, will you? Just go do
the
something.
The gentle nudge,
which is ironic now as I'm absolutely a lifelong learner and will do any form of study I possibly can now. And it would be the thing that I would do if I won the lottery, would be just learn for the rest of my life. But back then I was busting to get into work. I was, if you remember, like, work experience, you know, with that, like, when you, I don't know if it's still a thing, but, you know, you get shipped off for a week somewhere.
It is when COVID isn't running riot with it.
Oh, I've put that in the back of my mind. I forgot that exists. Yeah. yes, that thing. When I was doing work experience, I was in a cafe. It was fantastic. I loved the environment, the pace, as you know, making coffees and you know, just chatting to people, just having a great time. And I was lucky enough to step straight out of school, straight into that full time. So worked as a short order chef and barista for a little while before getting itchy feet and wanting to do some sort of study. You know, I started to think, oh, maybe I need a trade or something like that. I'm not really sure where I'm heading here, but it's nice to make money. So my trade of choice became beauty therapy. I trained as a remedial massage therapist and then did all the aspects of beauty therapy as on my sort of next journey as part of that, and really enjoyed it, really enjoyed again the kind of interaction with people, and got stuck into that. Was working at a salon. Now this is when I was around 18 years old, and I was working at a salon there with some lovely, lovely people. One day the owner came in and said, look, I think I'm going to be shutting down the salon, so you know, I want to let you guys know nice and early so you can find new places to work. And I was really devastated because I had been really enjoying the job and I liked the environment, and I didn't really want to move on. And so we were talking about it kind of endlessly, and she said to me, well, I'll sell it to you if you like. And now just to set context, it sounds heaps fancier than it is, but it was like, take on a lease, get the business name, get the clientele and the stock that was in the salon. And, you know, it's a small lease. I mean, this is years ago when leases were affordable for retail shops. So she said, you know, you can have it for $5,000. Which is basically all the money I had in the world at that age, and called my parents up and said, look, this is the conversation that's been had. And they said, just, this sounds interesting. Okay. They're kind of used to my impulsivity. They are also business owners themselves. And they said, okay, yep, we're not saying no, of course, you're an adult, but just wait the weekend, wait till we get home. They're away. Wait till we get home and we'll have a conversation about it and really think about it. So I completely ignored that and said yes, and kind of committed.
That's good advice.
Yeah, it was good advice. I didn't pay any attention to it. So very quickly I found myself as, you know, a little baby entrepreneur stepping into the world of business ownership with absolutely no idea what I was doing. I had no idea about financial management. I had no idea about marketing and advertising, had no idea about managing people, inventory. And so it was just a kind of learn as you go, figure it out. I definitely got stuffed around a few times by well-meaning individuals coming in to sell me advertising for more money than it was worth. You know, also had a pretty challenging experience where a previous employee there started to sort of take some clientele for herself away from the salon in a way that wasn't particularly appropriate. And so it was a year or so of, you know, just challenge and just kind of sludging through this and just trying to figure out what on earth I was doing until it got to the point where I was like, nah, this isn't right for me. I can't see this growing. The lease was due to be re-signed and I just knew that I wasn't quite ready. So I had to walk away from that. Now, this is when I get into my let's just figure out what we're doing here work era. So more beauty therapy at home. And I ended up picking up a job at a promotional modeling agency as a booker, essentially. It was like a receptionist and a booker. So I would book people for work. And your promotional modeling is all about sales. So do a bit of sales training and things like that to help people along. And met a wonderful human there who was going to be starting her own. And so I decided to jump in with her and as an employee, but you know, this was a sort of a modeling agency startup, if you can call it that, this many years ago. And we jumped 2 feet into that, trying to build that business. So I had the pleasure of, you know, being present for the business naming and the branding design and, you know, getting the space and starting to recruit and starting to sell to clients and figuring out our systems and our processes. And I was there from the ground up and that really developed a certain drive in me. I really enjoyed that process, being able to pick things up, put things down and just kind of move with it and move at pace. Did that for a few years. I mean, you know, I hope this podcast has plenty of time because I have had a curly career. But at some stage, I ended up in radio. So by that, I mean it was a community radio station, so community licensed dance music radio station in Adelaide. It's called Fresh FM. It's very cool. It's still there. And I was one of only a handful of employees. And I was lucky enough to have a role there of doing everything I could, basically. So promotions, marketing, and sales to kind of help keep the station going. Because yeah, we didn't have many employees. So again, I was like in everything, you know, I could kind of see all parts of the business and I just threw myself into that. Now radio was so much fun for me. I even got to be on the microphone very briefly. I had like one shift a week where I would do breakfast with a couple of mates that also worked there and just ran amok. And like, I loved that experience. Yeah, that was incredible. And yeah, that really, you know, kept igniting something in me. I was like, okay, energy. I love energy. I love radio people, that what they bring to the work that they do, just their immediacy of it, how quickly you can go from idea to execution, and just the fun that it brings, the entertainment aspect. Mm. And from there, moved into commercial radio, which is a very logical next step for somebody moving into the radio space, because that is where the money is and that is where the opportunity is. You know, like a commercial radio station has a little bit more potential for career and opportunity than the community stations, although, you know, bit more structure, bit maybe a bit less fun, but not definitely still fun. So I moved into commercial radio. I worked for Nova Entertainment, and I spent essentially the next, it's 13 years all up in radio. So I moved with that company into the Melbourne market, into the Sydney market. I was in sales positions. I worked for a couple of networks through that time. ARN as well as Nova, and dipped into car sales briefly for some digital marketing experience. And ended up in Sydney at Nova Entertainment in a role that was leading their branded content team. And that was incredibly exciting. And I learned so much in that role. Exciting, stressful, deadline driven, high level of people management, high level of process management. Big ideas, short deadlines, big budgets, big expectations. So that's, 4 years I had in that role. And that is the sort of the last time I was formally full-time, long-term employed. That kind of brings me to the next part, which is where I start working for myself. So do tell me if you'd like to jump in at any stage and ask any questions about that.
Well, I guess I was keen to understand what were some of the key challenges that you faced throughout that journey? Obviously, there's lots of twists and turns and it comes with lots of challenges. What were some of the key ones that you faced, especially in those younger years?
I think I've always seemed to take on roles that were slightly beyond me. I have had a bit of a forced confidence in myself. Maybe it's from jumping out of school really quickly and jumping into the deep end. But I've sort of ended up in roles where it's probably slightly beyond my capability or my knowledge at the time. And I've sort of had to really go all in to learn on the job. And I love that aspect of it because I think there's no better teacher than doing, and there's certainly no better teacher than failure. So that has always presented an issue though, because, you know, particularly in people management, I would say probably one of my biggest regrets was the people manager I was in the early days, where, you know, I would either treat people too much like friends and maybe, you know, they didn't get exactly what they would have needed from me, or I was maybe, you know, too harsh, or you know, there's always circumstances you think of where you think, oh gosh, I really could have managed that person or that situation better. So that was always a challenge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think just managing perspective within roles has been probably one of the most interesting things. The roles I've had have always been very fast paced and there's big opportunity within them, but they move really quickly. So it's, you know, piles and piles of emails every day, very short deadlines, you know, particularly with branded content. We would have a brief come in. That brief might be, you know, 200,000, 500,000, even more of advertising budget for a client who wants to achieve a really big idea executed within a radio environment with, you know, maybe socials and events and things like that. And you've got 2 days to come up with the idea, get it approved, schedule it out, figure it out, price it, and present it in a palatable format. And so that put a lot of pressure on. And so I think perspective is always a really challenging thing to achieve in that. And that was definitely my challenge through that period, getting above all the chaos.
Do you think having those short deadlines got better results out of you, or do you think it hindered your ability to strategically think and problem solve?
Do you know, I couldn't split the difference because I think, you know, with deadline energy, you get that urgency, like you don't have time to procrastinate. Yeah. But it does also bring the go where you're comfortable place, you know, what's easy, what do I know? And so you don't necessarily get the opportunity to push beyond that and think beyond that. So, you know, I couldn't split the difference. I still have to this day. I mean, it's been 4 years since I was in that role in particular, and I've had a content role since then. And I do content creation now, of course, as my own business, and help other brands do it too. So, you know, it's been a while since I've been in that pace, but I still work better on deadline pressure. Like I could have a month to do something and then I'll just wait until the last week. It's almost like a natural tendency to just put a bit of pressure on, because I think, you know, it does tend to make a few diamonds in that instance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure there's a sort of bell curve theory around the amount of pressure that someone needs, you know, too much pressure and someone shuts down, no pressure, and you sort of fall into this lull of lethargy, and, you know, you sort of can't think of anything because you're so bored out of your brains. It's about trying to find that sweet spot, and then stay in the sweet spot's another challenge as well. And then there's thinking about, I guess, some of those emotions that you're feeling, like how are you feeling as an 18-year-old? You've just all of a sudden inherited this business and you're trying to learn on the go. Like, what were some of the emotions you were feeling over that first year?
On the positive side, I'd say it was like really stepping into adulthood. You know, I sort of felt very responsible.
Real
and
adulting.
I think, yeah, proper adulting. And I think I enjoyed that aspect of it. I think I enjoyed that autonomy, which, you know, has since become one of my kind of guiding values in life, which is why I now work for myself. But it's that ability to be autonomous in what I was doing and where my energy was going was the positive side of that. The negative side of that would be just the self-doubt, you know, through that period. Like, you don't know what you don't know, and you can get, you know, I certainly got very down on that. You know, you sort of overthink it and be like, oh God, I can't believe I did that. You know, I can't believe I didn't know that. And just that feeling of being unknown, everything was like kind of what's around the corner, what's going to happen. So that was a bit of a challenge. But the benefit of being 18 is like, I mean, there's little that really gets you down. You know, it's kind of, life isn't as stressful at that stage. You know, I was living at home with mum and dad, so it was, you know, I had a roof over my head. And so being able to explore a business was a little less risky than it is now, you know, at 38, where I've got rent to pay and bills to pay and health insurance to maintain and all of those things. So, it taught me a little bit of, I think, confidence in myself, but also knowledge that self-worth is really challenged through those experiences.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to move into next, was some of the lessons that you've learned through that. And what would you say some of the key lessons that you learned throughout that radio career as well?
I think the biggest lesson that I've learned, and this comes with the benefit of retrospect, because as I said, I've been sort of 4 years out of that role in particular now, and I've been building my businesses through that period. I've had multiple goes at business since to get to where I am today. And so I've got that benefit of being able to look at it with a really clear perspective. And I would say the biggest lesson is it's very, very easy to over-identify with what you do. And that was most certainly my experience. Radio is an industry in which just fills your life. It's fun. You know, it's the people you work with are really engaging. You often make really great friends at work too, which goes beyond that treating a job like a job. It is like you come to work with your friends. In my instance, I also lived with my workmate and he was my roommate at the time, and I would travel with my boss and fellow colleagues, and you know, we were friends as well. And that made it very challenging to be able to separate who I was from what I did. And so I would fall often into the trap of almost over intellectualizing things that would happen at work and like putting it back on to myself and who I was. So like I felt like I was my job at that stage, and I wasn't exactly sure who I was without it, which is the reason I decided to leave. I just to get that headspace to go, do I even want to do this? Or am I just rolling with this because it's so fun and there's opportunity here and there's potential and it's all I know now? So identity has been one of my biggest learnings. The other one is probably how many habits certain jobs and roles can create for you without you realizing. So be it, you know, habitual coffee drinking, you know, beer slinging. In particular, our office in Sydney had a bar, you know, so like, you know, and every event was, you know, catered. And so there was, you know, a lot of social drinking. And, you know, that so work in that instance also had the ability to develop some habits that weren't necessarily supportive to clear-headed thinking, being able to show up at your best self every day. You know, if you're hosting clients or you've got an event on or you just got a late deadline, so, you know, grab a glass of wine or a beer, sit down and, you know, start smashing out the work. So, habits has been a big
habits
one.
Habits are massive. So I have a lot of my meetings happen in cafes with work at the moment. And so then it's sort of like trying to keep on top of the coffee consumption. And I get up early and drink coffee from early in the morning. So I was like, oh, this is getting away from me. But then also the other thing I've noticed is now also working from home, sort of on and off. And then all of a sudden you're looking at the wine bottle in the fridge going, oh, wait, I can't start drinking at work. And so I haven't yet because I sort of thought I'm going to cut that habit off before it starts.
Huge recommend on that one. Yeah. I sometimes get fed like memories in Instagram or something, you know, this day 4 or 5 years ago. And it's like my computer set up, like paperwork everywhere, like presentation on screen, glass of red wine. You know, I'm there late just smashing something out. And I'm just like, geez, like how was my head at that stage? I mean, look, you know, I've been sober for nearly four years or something now, which is a big, when I left that career, it was a decision that kind of just happened. It just kind of rolled in. It wasn't purposeful. I just went, oh, this doesn't really serve me anymore. So, you know, I've been totally sober now for a long time. And so like my thinking is so much clearer, but it is hard still having that crutch, like, taken away when you're under deadline pressure is like, oh yeah. And I don't drink coffee anymore either. So I'm like really just getting into that of gosh, what, you know, what energy am I creating here to be able to do this? Yeah. And it's not always easy.
No. Interesting point you made there around your decision to walk away from radio, though you were actually finding it really fun. I think people often think it's time to move on once you've just completely hit the grind and it's completely lost its fun and it's sort of more so they're thinking, oh, as long as it's fun, I'm good. What was it? Was there a particular moment where you were really like came really clear that this potentially isn't serving me even though it's actually still quite enjoyable?
I'm unsure if there was a moment, but I will balance my sharing of the enjoyment of the role with, I did start to become very frustrated with the deadline pressure, with the scale of, you know, work in a role like that. And it's very necessary in a role like that. It's you are busy a lot and there, you know, things change very quickly. And I had always coped really, really well with that. But I did start to notice that I was feeling less engaged in the high energy need for it. So, you know, something would come in and sometimes in the previous years I'd be like, oh, all right, that sucks, but like let's get in, like, and I'd be able to rally troops and I'd be able to like be quite positive and almost like bring people on the journey. And I started to find it harder to show up in that way almost for other people as well. So I would feel defeated when I would see what was ahead of me, and so then I would kind of bring that energy and it would hinder my thinking. There wasn't necessarily a moment, but I did start to see a pattern of behavior where I felt like I was showing up more negatively, whether it be in, you know, meetings or in conversation with people or just, you know, that walking into work with that sort of like heavier feeling and things
was
that used to
cynicism
be
cynicism starting to creep
big
in?
Time. Yeah. Big time. Yeah. You know, it was always everybody else's fault. And that's what I started to notice is like, oh, if this person did this way, this would be better. or if, you know, we had more people in this way, this would be better. It became very external. And, you know, whether or not there's any truth to that whatsoever, it really doesn't matter, because it came down to how I was feeling, and projecting that elsewhere didn't necessarily do me any favors. And there was a moment where I was trying, and, you know, again, retrospect, I can be super articulate about this experience. In retrospect, at the time, it was an absolute bloody mess. But I did have a conversation one day with a business coach, which was so generously given to me by my employer for the, you know, ability to grow as a professional. And, you know, I was sort of sharing some of this with her, and how frustrated I was, and how I couldn't really figure out where I wanted to go. You know, there were a lot of conversations at the time, like, what sort of role would you like to move into? Like, do you think that you're more, you know, aligned to this area or this area? And like, they're really positive growth conversations, really, really positive. But I had no idea how to answer it. I was like, and I would look around to me and I'd be like, well, everything I see looks slightly worse than what I'm doing. So it's like, it's better, you know, on the scale of organizational, perhaps, you know, even revenue wise or whatever. But it didn't necessarily feel like it was going to get any better. It actually looked like more pressure and just a different type of pressure. So I couldn't really see the wood from the trees in that respect. And yeah, a lot of this is what I was sharing with my business coach. And I was just like, I can't answer the question about where I want to go. I don't feel particularly good in what I'm doing. There is aspects of it I really like, but there's also aspects of it that are causing me, as you say, to be quite cynical. You know, it's a great word for it, because it's definitely where I was at. You know, what am I going to do? And she was sort of starting to lay out all these, you know, oh, you could do this. You could start, you know, doing some values work. And, you know, and I just had this gnawing feeling. I was just like, I feel like I just need to stop. That was the gnawing feeling I had. I was like, I cannot get perspective with 700 emails coming with these deadlines. I cannot answer the questions being asked of me. I can't strategically plan for departmental growth feeling this way, because I cannot get any clarity. And so I said to the business coach, I think I need to quit. And she's like, classic, takes me right back to like my parents with the salon. Just wait a little bit. Just don't quit yet. Just let's work on it for a couple of weeks. Let's maybe think about an approach, you know, maybe bring your leaders in, tell them how you're feeling. Maybe you can phase out, maybe you can phase back, maybe things could change. And I was like, nah. Once I'd made that decision, I knew I had to just rip the Band-Aid off. And so, yeah, I quit with, I sort of went in the next, the Monday following, and said I was leaving and I had nothing to go to. I didn't have another job. I just needed to stop. I just needed some bloody headspace. That's the only thing I could describe, is that I just knew I needed some space.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always such a hard decision to come to. And I know it's definitely that thing of, yes, there is ideal scenario, you're strategic about it, you take time with it and things, but there is also a point and a reality where it's sort of like, well, you just got to embrace it for what it is and step into the unknown, as scary as that might be. And obviously, if you can not just, you know, step off the edge of the cliff without a plan, that is good for a lot of people. But sometimes it's a necessity if there's bigger things and more high value things that are at stake. You just sort of step off and take the leap and hope it works out okay.
Well, it does certainly come with its privilege as well. Like, I was incredibly privileged to be able to even make that decision. I didn't have a family. I didn't have a mortgage. It was when I actually resigned, it was like September 2019. So I walked out the door January 2020, like, that's okay. The world of advertising will keep moving and marketing, and I'll have roles and I can have space. And I was like, well, fucked that up, didn't I? Because it was obviously Jan 2020. But, you know, it comes with a huge element of privilege to have even been able to make that choice. And, you know, I definitely take that on board to be like, you know, so many people can't necessarily just walk away. And, you know, again, in the beauty of retrospect, I perhaps would have just tried to create space in another way. But I actually already had, I had begged, borrowed and stolen to get like 12 weeks annual leave off that year to go traveling. And like, so I'd already kind of like tried, and then I was like, I'll come back. I was like, well, I'm cooked here anyway. But yeah, I did have that that unknown sort of privilege of thinking, oh, it's going to be okay. I've got a lot of experience. I can take some time and I will find another role. Naturally, with what happened in the glorious year that was 2020, there were no other roles to be had.
Oh, that's crazy. I think so. It was similar for me in a role that I left not too long ago. So I started the conversations with my wife around, you know, I think I'm going to start looking into the next sort of step in my career. And she was sort of like, yeah, no, that's good. She's like, if you could find a job before you quit, that would be great. I would really appreciate that. And I fully respected that. And so had every intention to have a job locked in before finishing. But then sort of as that journey went on, and it wasn't an overly long period, but I sort of got to a point where I was like, I'm ready to sort of give my notice on this day. I was waiting on a potential offer, and I had an offer in front of me, but I made the decision. So I turned down the job offer I'd been given, quit, and then was waiting on the one that I thought was actually best in alignment with what I wanted to do and what I wanted to learn and grow in. And so I think the key thing for me was it was around staying in alignment with my values, not selling myself short just because I could take the immediate thing that was there for me. So it was funny. So then I've sort of given my notice, and then I'm like, this other job better come through. And then, yeah, they might have been going to be calling me on a certain day, or I was expecting to get called that day, and the call didn't come. And then all of a sudden you're just like holding your nerve going, oh, I hope I've done the right thing. And it was maybe the next week, sort of midway through the next week, I got the call and I was, whoo, oh, it's paid off. But it was a nervous wait. It turned out there was some question in HR that they were waiting on getting answered before that they could come to me. So it took a bit longer than they expected. But I think I sort of took that as a learning around when it, you know, sticking to your values when it comes to, you know, your career journey and the directions you're going to go and stuff. And so, yeah, but it gets nerve wracking sometimes.
Oh, I can imagine. I would be terrified. Yeah. But yes, there is always it's an element of trust that the right thing will come. And again, like that's said with so much privilege, because like, you know, right now I've got a lot of trust that things are going to go really well, but I'm also looking at profit and loss statements going, holy shit. So it's like, it's always a balance. But yeah, I think quite often when you take a bet on yourself and, you know, you throw yourself in something, and particularly when you say no to something that's not aligned, then that usually does create a little bit of space for something else to come in. But yeah, there's a lot of trust and a lot of privilege built into that. But yeah, I would have been very nervous too.
Good times. So diving into your podcast a bit. So Unemployed and Afraid, awesome name. I was actually just watching your little clip that you had put up talking about you naming it and stuff. I think that was on your Instagram page. So people can go check that one out. But it sort of instantly jumped out at me. I thought it was an awesome name, because I love names. I like names of podcasts and things. I just love scrolling through and looking at the names of podcasts and stuff. It's such a fun creative process doing that. So I think the key thing that had really stood out to me in your podcast and what sort of got me really into it and diving in, and I do feel like a bit of a fan today getting a great opportunity to talk to their idol. So it's pretty cool.
Alex, but it's
the thing that I really connected with was this, obviously the openness and the rawness that you share in that podcast. And I was keen to hear this, what it was for you that made you make that decision to say, I'm going to make this podcast extremely authentic, very open and honest, right down to the dollar details sometimes. What was it that made you make that decision?
Yeah, I forgot about that episode, that solo episode where I literally tell listeners, this is how much I've spent on this podcast. This is how much it's made for me. Shit. But I'm absolutely determined to grow it into the absolute beast that I know that it will be. But thank you for the lovely compliment on the name. And yeah, it's funny to reflect on the development of that and why it is called Unemployed and Afraid, because it is representative of being not employed by another human. So it is representative of being self-employed. And also in that weird transition period where you're like, where am I going? It definitely tries to capture that as well. But feeling untethered, so unsafe, kind of floating, and being afraid all the time, because that is just a reality and it's not necessarily a negative thing. I think I've got a really optimistic view most of the time on fear and that element, because it is, it's a driver. Maybe it's replaced deadline pressure for me, but it is a driver. If I feel nervous, it means I probably care. If I feel scared, it means it's probably going to drive me to do things that I wouldn't do. It keeps me unsafe and that keeps me growing. But back to your question, it's a really great one, because I don't think I've reflected in any way anywhere else about why I decided to make it so authentically open through it. But it has evolved to become more and more open as I've developed my confidence. But there is a piece of feedback that I was often given throughout my professional career. And it was, depending on the circumstance, delivered in a multitude of ways. It could either be a real positive or a potential negative on my work experience or the experience of people working with me or my growth. And it was that I would show up very authentically at work. It could be, it's been labeled at times as emotional, sometimes overly emotional. So that could look like me coming into a meeting with like high energy, like blah, 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 which is like people love it, you know, like there she's like showing up and getting everybody razzed up for idea creation or getting everyone pumped about this, you know, this presentation we're about to do and, you know, pushing hard to get results and get the best out of people. But then sometimes it could also look like, you know, something I thought was unfair, I thought wasn't valid, I thought was missing the mark, be it in executive conversations where we were talking about people or, you know, the experience of workmates and colleagues and the staff and, you know, staff happiness or anything like that. You know, I would also come in with a fair whack of emotionality. I don't know if that's a word, but we'll make it one.
It's one word.
Okay, good. Into those environments to be like, this is how I feel. And, you know, this is kind of what I want you to take from it. And so, you know, and I was given that feedback that in some circumstances that wasn't very helpful, be it for the person taking it on board or even for my own professional reputation. And so what I took from that is the authentic me wasn't right, wasn't good, and needed to change. And that isn't necessarily how it was intended. You know, I think a lot of people were saying to me, look, you're awesome, but if you can just channel that awesomeness of your emotionality into the right circumstances, it will really work for you, but just know when to pull it back. Whereas I thought I did pull it back. I was like, I feel like I don't blow up.
You have no idea, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, like this is me. This is me trying to be appropriate to the circumstance. But, you know, perhaps maybe sometimes not. But, you know, I think being real and expressing how I feel in relation to what I think is something that comes really, really natural to me. And I think I also often process thoughts and how I'm feeling and think like verbally. I'm a verbal person. That's just handy being a podcaster, but I think that's also how I work out some of my feelings. So at some, and that can be great for some people who match on that level, but for people who are more like, I'll go away, think about it, and then come back with a really well-formed idea or ability to express, that can be a bit quote unquote much. And I don't like, you know, that term, because women in professional environments can often be told they're a bit much. And it's something that, you know, I don't get around for in a negative sense. I think a bit much is on the person and not on the individual. You know, who's to say what a bit much is? But anyway, I digress into feminism. But, you know, that sort of ability to authentically express and show up as who I am in most situations, I think I was sort of taking a bit of ownership of that back and making it a good thing, because I think that is how we truly connect. When we show up as who we are, the people that will respond to that and will get something from that will find you and it will flourish. And so, you know, that's the challenging thing in a lot of corporate environments is you've got a huge mix of people. Like you've got people on all ends of the introvert, extrovert, you know, scale. You've got the way people process emotions and ideas and thoughts, you know, it's all so different. So you can't keep everyone happy in that. When you work for yourself, you've got more ability to attract your tribe, So, you know, I think there was an element of that in the creation of the podcast, and it's definitely like grown with me too. And now the other side of it is the reason I started the podcast was when I left my radio career and was thrown into the abyss of no available work, I started to do all sorts of things. So I was in Sydney at the time. I had to move into a much cheaper lifestyle to be able to deal with the fact that there was no work around. So I moved to the east coast of Tasmania in a tiny town of 600 people. So I went from like Surry Hills crowds to 600 people total. It was a very, very different environment. But, you know, it was really affordable, the lifestyle, and I had the space to be able to explore ideas. The ideas that I explored was, you know, I became a yoga teacher and I built that into a business where I had a local class, and I also taught privately at high-end Airbnbs. I started to create plant-based recipes, which is an old hobby of mine, and was sort of doing that and sharing that. And I had some clients come on board to pay me for content creation, so that became a little business. And then I then also made ceramics. So I learned to make ceramics, and I made a beautiful range of homewares that went wildly popular beyond what I expected. And so I was doing that as a business. And that then, like that moment when I was sitting there making ceramics, because this is me just, you know, exploring ideas at this phase. It's like, oh, shit, what can I do? You know, also I'm in Tassie. Like, it's not like there's, you know, East Coast, there's like not loads of radio or advertising or marketing work there. This is, you know, what I was doing. And I would sit at my making desk making ceramics, a handmade, had my headphones on. I'm an audio nerd. I would listen to podcasts all day long. And I was listening and looking for business stories in particular, because I like the interview format of podcasts. Certainly love the narrative style as well. But most often, 90% of what I listen to is an interview style podcast, unless it's someone I love and I'll get into their solos. But what I was finding at the time, like I went through a ton of titles in business interviews, and the fundamental theme of all of them was, here's a successful person, a host who has had a business, quote unquote, made it, you know, had some like learnings, but has some notoriety associated to their business. Like, I'm this person who's done this, and now I've decided to create a podcast, right? So that was the host circumstance. And then that host was interviewing notable business people who have had some success and could come on and share their story in a kind of a start, middle, end format. So all day long, sitting there making ceramics, I would listen to successful people talk to successful people about their success and how they got there. And they'd certainly touch on, you know, a bit of challenge. Absolutely. Like it would get touched on, but I felt like it was like just surface and just below. Like, oh yeah, it was really hard when like we all almost ran out of money in, you know, 2015. But then we got better and this, you know, and I was like, okay, guys, like I am at the beginning of this journey. I don't even know if this business that I'm doing is what I want to be doing. I don't understand anything right now to do with effective, you know, inventory management or planning, like even things like learning how to, I would make this joke often on my own podcast, but like learning how to use accounting software is like 4 days of your life over. Like everything is hard. And I'm like, but what, you know, and but particularly on the person, like it's really hard to show up and promote yourself when you're doing your own business. Really, really hard to like do either a piece to camera or a photo of yourself with a, you know, heartfelt caption or a blog post, anything like that, being this is me and this is what I do and this is why you should buy what I do or what I sell or whatever. That is so hard to work out how to do. It takes so much confidence. All of your shit comes to the forefront, your self-worth, your self-doubt, your people-pleasing, feeling embarrassed, all of that. So I was like listening to these podcasts going, guys, like, this is so fucking unrelatable, excuse my French. Like, it's aspirational, but it's not helping me with where I am right now. I need to hear from people at all levels. And so that is, you know, what I can refer in the work that I do now. Like, that's a cultural insight. Like, it's a human insight. Yeah. And I was like, if I feel that, I'm sure other people feel that too. And I did notice a narrative in socials at the time as well of like people being a bit more real in the way they were sharing. I think COVID brought a lot of that out in us. You know, there was like that element of vulnerability. It felt like vulnerability was really hitting its time. Like Brené Brown obviously would disagree. Yeah. Like, she's like, it's been around for a while, but it did feel like it was, you know, a time to be vulnerable. So all of those things kind of matched up into the execution of the podcast, which is I want to create a space where business owners can feel supported to perform at all levels. So, which is why I speak to people who are solopreneurs just at the start of their journey, right through to people who are managing 10, 20, you know, 30 strong staff, or maybe exiting, or maybe selling in the millions, you know, all like scales of business owners. Yeah. And we get into like the reality of the journey, because I'm like, authenticity and understanding that the emotions we feel are so universal is key to business owners staying in it, because, you know, the statistics of failure is significant. And that's because you just only see this huge success and you're like, I am so far away from that. Like, how do I get there? So I guess, you know, all of those things combined, I was able to bring my vulnerability and authenticity into that conversation as a human, but also as a genre, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. And then obviously all of your skill sets from your experience and stuff. I was having similar conversation, and it's so funny. So reaching out to people, asking if they want to be on the podcast and stuff. Mm. Exact same response. So I connected with a uni student on LinkedIn, and we got chatting, and she was, you know, thinking through some questions around her future career journey and stuff. And so we're chatting. I said, and she was asking these really good questions, and I was like, oh, I'd love to get you on the podcast and have a chat. And what do you think her immediate thought is? Oh, I can't be on a podcast. God. Like, I'm a uni student. You're probably going to have all these, you know, big fancy people on there talking about these big career transitions and stuff. And I'm like, no, you'll have something to share with the audience that they're not thinking about, and they're going to have something that can help you as well. And it's the exact same response that I've gotten from CEOs that I've spoken to of, you know, $20 million revenue companies going, oh, like, do you really want me? Like, so it's, yeah, it's funny. The universal feelings that we have of either inadequacy or imposter syndrome and all of that is there, whether or not you're in uni still, or whether you're the CEO of a corporation. Yeah, so having that voice in between, that sort of filling that void, that's actually saying all the things that everyone's thinking but didn't want to talk about, and then people also realizing that it doesn't diminish your credibility and actually only enhances it when you're actually having those conversations, putting it out on the table and saying, hey, I feel insecure, but I'm still doing and working towards the goals that I have. And the two don't have to be in a conflict. They're sort of running side by side, and I'm just still doing the things I want to do despite these emotions or things that might come up. So yeah, it's I think it's such a great space to be in.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If only, you know, I hope that uni student is coming onto the podcast, and I will absolutely look forward to listening to that episode as well, because it's step by step we start to see our potential in that space and prove to ourselves. But yeah, it's so universal, and like, there's so much of that, like, I don't mean to be offensive, but, you know, like tech broing and like high, you know, confidence and fake it till you make it, and like, you know, all the headlines and stuff. I think we've been taught for so long that that's how we have to show up in business to be able to be taken seriously. But it's a balance between the two. Like, all of us are faking it till we make it in the most instance, and probably saying things a little bit scary that, you know, we don't know a lot about, or whatever, just putting things out there. And but yeah, it's a balance. Like, we shouldn't feel ashamed to say this was hard and this was why, or this is how I feel about this, but I don't know whether or not this is correct. It's totally okay. And you've got to be just open to feedback and grow through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I was keen to then ask this question. So for me, obviously, the audience that I'm targeting here is around career development and people thinking through how they want to sort of progress their career, take ownership of their career. And often if someone is in a place of feeling frustration or stuck in their career, the light bulb moment comes, I should start my own business. Mm-hmm. When do you think that is a good decision? When is it a bad decision based on sort of the motives that someone might have, that they're thinking starting my own business is going to be my ultimate savior?
Fantastic question. Could do another whole hour on this. there is okay, but I'll stay on topic. When should I start? I think the short answer is, if you've got a desire to do it, you should absolutely go for it. Like, absolutely. Don't think that you have to have it all figured out. Don't think that you have to have the perfect plan, the perfect business plan. Don't think that, you know, you have to have XXX all in line to do it. You should absolutely do it. Like, follow that energy 100%. Now, like anything, there is the other side of it. If you think that starting your own business is going to give you more time or more money or more flexibility, put it in the bin. Like, it's just not true. It's just not true. Like, I left one job, of which there was multiple facets within my one job. You know, there's people leadership, there's, you know, being strategic, there's commercial ideation, there's all that stuff, right? But I have 15 jobs now. I am, you know, marketing, advertising, accounting, admin, I'm everything. And so there is no off button. You don't put tools down at 5 o'clock on a Friday and go, now is my time to relax. It's always in the back of your mind. You're like, oh, shit, I didn't do that thing. Let me just write that down real quick. Or like, oh, maybe, you know, like, I shouldn't be relaxing because every minute spent is minute I could be working on my business. And, you know, so you've got that constant turmoil going on. So you take on a lot more work than you realize. In terms of flexibility, yes, you can make a hair appointment on a Wednesday as opposed to a Saturday or a Thursday night when it's a little bit busy, but the likelihood is that you will be working Saturday, Sunday. Like, that's just how it is. It's not like you can just like lunch every day. It just isn't. So it's that awareness that moving into that space. Now, there's a lot of megaphoning on Instagram and TikTok, you know, in particular, of starting drop shipping businesses and making hundreds of thousands of dollars, or course creation and making hundreds of thousands of dollars. But the reality is, in order to take home $100,000, you need to be doing about $1 million in revenue because of the costs associated with all of those aspects. So those, if your thought is like, I can go do this and make this much, scratch below the surface a little bit, figure out actually what your cost modeling is going to look like in order to get you there, because I think you'll be shocked at how little you may be taking home in that instance and for the scale of work that you're doing. So it's all about really just digging a little bit deeper and balancing it with that energy, because yes, you can do any of those things that I just described. You can do any of them. You can start a brand, you can get out there, but it is, in some instances, going to be more expensive than you planned for, and it is going to be more taxing, and you are going to have a self-growth journey just as much as you're going to have a professional journey. Like, it's not just going, you know, to start your own business and go, like, I'm going to start my own business. It's also like the most deep, painful therapy ever, because all of your shit comes to the surface. If you've got a problem, not a problem with money, but if you've got like a tendency to lean into scarcity, that's certainly something that I have, like fear around money, it's going to be amplified tenfold, and it is going to get in the way of your progress. If you have a little bit of people-pleasing tendency, certainly something that I have, that's going to be amplified tenfold, and it's going to stop you from doing certain things that you need to do for your business. If you struggle with self-worth, again, definitely something that I struggle with. It's going to be really, really challenging to put yourself out there and say, I'm great. Like, that's just going to be really, really hard. So yeah, you just got to strap in for all of those things. It's the biggest personal growth journey you can have. It's not going to be easy. Is it worth it if you can, you know, make it through and grow? Oh, 100%. 100%. Now, I don't say that from being on the other side of the mountain. I'm still growing my business. It's a challenge every single day. But what I've come to realize is it's not about getting to the mountain. It's just going on the journey. And those like micro growth steps are just so much more major and need so much more appreciation. And you just have to know that you're strapping in for a journey and not a destination.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. I've had a similar sort of short attempts at personal business stuff. I was doing some pallet furniture stuff. So I left school at 16, did a cabinet making apprenticeship, and then sort of worked in cabinet making and carpentry at different times. And then, sort of started a furniture business for a little bit there. And yeah, definitely you learn a lot about yourself. So the things that I identify and that I've then grown in is, always had this sort of blind optimism. But I've sort of had to then learn how to sort of build onto that optimism, actual skills and knowledge and action and stuff. So we're in a one bedroom apartment with one little garage, and I'm trying to make furniture. I don't have all the tools, have zero money behind us to actually get the things that I needed to be doing it really well. So of course it's extremely frustrating trying to make things when you don't have the right tools. And
I feel that there's a euphemism in that, like there's metaphor for sure.
Oh man. And carried this belief that everything's just going to be fine. So really good for lowering stress, but it means that you're the sort of going along. It doesn't alleviate stress of your wife.
Fair.
So it's going to be all good, babe. She's like, how are you going to do this? How are you going to get out there? How are you going to make sales? And I'm like, it's all good. It's going to happen. And that was a real learning experience for me for going, actually, that's just obviously some beliefs that I've grown up with, that I think things are just going to take care of themselves. When actually it takes your action and initiative and drive to move something towards where you want it to go and stuff. And so that really highlighted in me a level of procrastination that I had, which I then really sort of tried to take ownership. And I feel I've really turned that around into what has more so become a strength for me now in being sort of proactive and on the front foot in driving things forward rather than sort of sitting back and thinking things are going to work themselves out. So, yeah, you discover all these little nooks and crannies about yourself.
Oh, so many nooks. There's a statement on behind my backdrop here is my whiteboard, and I've got something, a few things written on there as little reminders, but one is that action creates information, and you just have to do something to figure out the next thing, to figure out the next thing. The other one that's on there that I love is become the person capable of achieving the thing. So rather than achieve the thing, just bit by bit become the person that's going to be able to do that eventually, because that's going to be the make or break. So, yeah, I feel that. It's just bit by bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Well, Kim, thank you so much. Like you said, there is so many different rabbit holes that we could have kept going down all day. But I think that's going to be a really good place to sort of finish up for the day and close off. But can you just firstly share with people how they might be able to find you if they want to listen to your podcast or get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Gosh, I'm on so many social media networks. But you can listen to the podcast wherever you get the podcast. So Unemployed and Afraid, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever else you can find them. You can find me on the socials as Unemployed and Afraid for all pod things. So Instagram, TikTok, all is Unemployed and Afraid. Me personally, my business name for my podcast consulting business is Good Side of the Bed. That's kind of like my social media alias, has been my brand for quite some time. So you can find me on Instagram as Good Side of the Bed, or on LinkedIn as Kim Curtin, which is my favorite place to hang out. So definitely find me there and connect with me and drop into the DMs, because it's a good place to hang out.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kim.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.